Going on from Hold On to Nothing, step 15, takes us automatically to step 16, which is Don't Defend. You could easily add to that, don't explain yourself, and don't apologize either. But anyway, let's start with Don't Defend. The energy of the infinite self is the energy of the initiate. Nobody's going to understand that. Once you begin to get it, you're not going to be able to explain it to anybody, and you certainly aren't going to be able to show it to anyone. The very fact that you do try to show it to someone, or you try to explain it, means it is not it. It's invisible. It's silent power. It's knowing without speaking. It's acting without requiring confirmation or observers. It's doing without effort. Maybe that's a bit dissatisfying for the ego, but that is the reality of this power. You can't wield it. If you wield it, you become satanic. If you try to show people, it's egotistical, and it will fall from you. It'll disappear through your fingers, like King Arthur's sword, Excalibur. The sword came from the Lady of the Lake. It came from the yin, from femininity, silence, quietness, the placid lake. Then because of confrontation and wars, and because of misuse, the Excalibur fell from Arthur's grip and returned to the lake. The infinite power is a silent power. If you have to defend yourself, if you have to explain yourself, you're lost. But at the very most, you can say, I know nothing. What are you doing? I'm doing nothing. Why are you getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning? I just like it that way. I'm best in the early mornings. You can't be an exhibition of power, because then your desire for power comes from an egotistical standpoint. If you're not wielding power, if you're not trying to establish observers, if you're not falling for the common trap of having to have people observe your spirituality, observe your holiness, observe your goodness, then you can be invisible. You can have an immense knowledge, an immense power, and when you're walking along, people don't know whether you're the greatest initiate that ever lived or the guy that works at the 7-Eleven. You can be inside yourself without promotion, without attempting to elevate yourself, without seeking observers. You don't have to defend the power. The power is indefensible. So don't get into arguments with people. Don't get into discussions with people. Don't talk about yourself and don't talk about the path. Keep it to yourself. Make your life mysterious. Don't let the energy escape. It's like having a bunch of butterflies under a hat. They're beautiful and colorful, and they create energy. But if you lift your hat and you show people, the butterflies fly away. So from here on out, you have to learn to internalize what you know, as well as internalizing your life. Internalizing your life is the process that I described earlier on, where you start to see external life as signs, symbols, messages, and signposts. It's a dialogue. But as you internalize the power, you can't hold onto it. You've always got to let it flow through you. It's a golden wind, and you sure as hell aren't going to get out there and try to develop converts. You don't need to promote. If you have a perception, act dumb. Stay silent, and the power doubles and redoubles. So, don't defend, don't explain yourself either. When people ask, what are you doing, just smile and say nothing. In defending and explaining, you're apologizing. You don't have to apologize for the fact that you've decided to take life in a sacred way. You don't have to apologize for the fact that you are silently walking from ego to spirit. You just don't have to apologize. Okay, if you step on somebody's foot, you can say, I'm sorry for stepping on your foot. But what I mean is, don't apologize for your actions. Don't apologize for your beliefs. And don't apologize for the way that you may be developing a different perception. Because as you take on these 33 steps, you will become extremely different extremely quickly. Because it's not the way that ordinary people operate. So, you don't have to sell anybody, and you don't have to convert anybody. By explaining the power, you belittle it. By showing it, you're saying you don't believe it. It isn't real, it isn't true, it isn't me. So don't bother with any of that. Just silently work on yourself and know that you're growing. The point where you feel you are not growing is when you are growing the most. When you engage the ego, when you think you're doing fantastically well, when you've got your saffron robes and you're clanking your little gong and everybody's watching, that's when you're not growing. That's when you're right in the currency of the ego. Establishing observers and admirers, people to watch you and say, isn't she beautiful? Isn't she amazing? Isn't he spiritual? Is a weakness. The fact is, take the power inside, don't defend it, don't apologize, and don't explain yourself to people. Just do what you do. The point here is to make your journey sacred and silent. which takes us automatically to step 17, which is constantly purify yourself. To constantly purify means that you understand that you will hourly and daily be assailed by the ego's perception, by its traits, its urges, its desires. So you can't just take on a concept and that's it, because it takes you a while to belong to the idea. You can understand a concept, can't you, like your word is law, intellectually, in 3 to 5 seconds. But to actually feel it, to feel it deep within, that takes longer. So in constantly purifying yourself, we're looking always to be vigilant against the negativity of the ego. Be careful with your dialogue and don't express negative energy in the way you talk. Even if you feel negative, don't voice it. Be careful with that and purify your feelings. When you feel crazy, pull back and relax. Take a moment to be with nature. Take a moment to be with yourself to figure out what is really going on. When you feel angry, take a moment to analyze what are you angry about. In the little booklet that comes with this program, there's a chapter on anger. It shows you how to process emotion, particularly anger. All you have to know about anger is that all anger comes from loss. There isn't any other form of anger. So when you're angry, rather than experiencing the anger as a feeling and exhibiting anger, you silence yourself and you observe the anger and say, hey, wait a minute, I need to purify myself. Why am I angry? Ask yourself, what have you lost? You may have lost something tangible, like your car or your stereo system. Or you may have lost something less tangible, like an opportunity, a job, a daily rhythm, a friendship. Look at what you have lost and then agree to lose it. If you like, you may set upon a plan to get back what you've lost. But generally speaking, when things disappear from your life, it's just the universal law liberating you of stuff. Most of the stuff you lose isn't worth chasing after. To purify yourself, you have to spend time on your own. And you have to constantly sift through your thoughts and feelings, asking yourself, hey, what are my motivations here? You know, what are my urges? What are my feelings? How do I actually feel? How do I get to the bottom of these issues within me? Then, of course, you're going to have to come up with some kind of physical, emotional, mental, philosophical, and spiritual discipline for your life. And I'm going to deal with that in one of the later sessions. By purifying yourself and staying inside the energy, you're not going to trash that energy by suddenly doing something weird like eating a whole bunch of junk or going out for a week or two and drinking yourself stupid or getting stoned so you can't operate. You're not going to take your energy into places where it'll be trashed. You're not going to trash your energy by fighting with people. If a confrontation looks like it's developing, start to walk away. There isn't a fight that's worth having. The initiate walks away. Only the fool stands and fights. Sure, you can defend yourself if someone comes at you physically, but the best form of self-defense is your feet, which you use for walking away. A lot of people have got hurt when the ego's indignation forced them into a confrontation. Don't mess with that. Each year in the mountains of New Mexico, north of Santa Fe, at a place called Sipapu, I present a series of trainings called Warriors in the Mist. In that training, we learn martial arts, but we're not learning martial arts to attack people or to be confrontational. We learn it just to resonate a stronger energy and to develop confidence, as well, of course, for health and fitness. It's very much like the Shaolin in China, that were a religious Taoist group that had martial arts as a part of their discipline and their culture. Martial arts is a good thing because it helps you feel strong and capable. If you resonate powerfully, silently, you'll never be a victim, because predators pick on people that are not strong. They don't pick on the powerful, silent types. So you can be strong without ever getting into a confrontation with anybody. And you can be the greatest martial arts exponent that there's ever been and never be in a fight. So, going back to purifying yourself means you'll be constantly vigilant. You're not going to take yourself into places where your energy will be wasted or where there's something degrading going on. You're going to set good boundaries. If something's happening that isn't a part of the spiritual noble ideals that you've laid down for yourself, then avoid it. If you have friends that are rat bags and sleaze bags, don't judge them. Just observe them to be sleaze bags and walk away. You don't have to have them as friends. You make choices that constantly take you towards purity and strength. Stay out of places that you know will drag you down. Stay out of relationships that you know will drag you down. Always select the highest energy, the strongest place. When walking into a place like a restaurant, ask yourself, where is the power spot here? Then take it, if it's available. If not, take the second most powerful place. By being a policeman for your energy and guarding it, you're also going to be sure that you don't waste it. So much energy is wasted in dead ends, or you trash it on futile things, worrying and so forth. So purification is observing what works and what doesn't. They say that 80% of your money comes from 20% of your actions. So you'll have quality actions that bring you money, and you'll have loads of other actions that are just tooling around keeping you happy, or just where you're pretending to be busy, important or active, but it's not actually getting you anything. So as you purify and watch, you see what works and what doesn't. If there are certain people that drive you crazy, avoid them. If you think, every time I see Harry and Shmary, I get into an argument with them, so I think I'm going to avoid Harry and Shmary from here on out. It's simple. If you go into a place and it feels strange, leave. Trust your feelings. Leave. If you're in a restaurant and there's something odd about it, walk out. If as you walk into the restaurant, say, the waitress is fighting with the chef, leave. It's a warning. Watch the energy around you. If it's balanced, stay. If it's imbalanced, walk. If you're standing in line and the person behind you feels odd, move. Let them go first. Stand at the back of the line. But begin to move away from imbalance and towards strength. The infinity inside you is very beautiful and very important. And you're not going to trash your energy by taking it into places or into situations where there's copious amounts of sludge. And you're not going to do things that will lower your energy. Dysfunctional behavior, food problems, heavy drinking, drug taking. Sure, you can have the odd drink and party down a bit. But a little bit of this and a little bit of that, not copious amounts of sending your energy down the gurgler. Remember what I said before. The faster your energy goes, the greater your experience in this lifetime, the greater your awareness, but also the greater the possibility of you falling from a great height. So when you have the energy of a slug in a puddle and you're plodding along at 20,000 cycles a second, in a way, you're powerless, but you're fairly safe. Once you raise your energy and you're going faster and faster, if you fall out of balance, you're going to fall extremely out of balance extremely quickly from a great height. So guard your energy and don't allow things to get out of control. If something looks like it's getting out of control, nip it in the bud. Act quickly. Fix it. Do something positive that's going to reestablish your dominance over your life. You see, at some time, probably a long time ago, you made the decision to evolve. The reason you made the decision was because you had used up the energy of where you found yourself. You said to yourself, I want to evolve. It's almost as if in some sacred place, there's a scroll with your name on it, saying, destined to evolve out of the earth plane. If that is your destiny, why mess around on a sidetrack? Purify, stay on top of things, walk slow, control, and watch. Don't allow things to trash this journey. This brings me to the 18th step, which is respect all living things. Observe the beauty in all things. What I'm saying here is, as you develop a spirituality within, you're not going to come from the grabbing, rapacious attitude that many have. You're not going to consume more than you need to. You're not going to trash things just for the sake of trashing them. You're going to have respect for the neighborhood and for the people. Of course, all living things include humans. It's easy to respect people when you know them and love them, when they're your friends. But it's much harder to respect people that you don't know. And it's particularly hard to respect people when their energy is a bit grim. That's the challenge. Now, you have to understand why their energy is grim in order to respect them. The reason why people act in a dysfunctional way, or in a criminal way, or in a way that is hurtful to others, is because they are victims of their own personalities, of their own egos. They're victims of a society that teaches us all sorts of strange concepts about importance, glamour, and material wealth. Grab what you can, cheat, rob, pillage, steal. That's just part of the disease of this evolution. If you look at it from a finite point of view, it can really bug you and scare you. But if you look at it from an infinite point of view, people that are ratbags are just people that are learning to deal with their egos. They may cause a tremendous amount of mayhem in our society, but deep within, they're infinite. Deep within, they're eternal. Deep within, they have the God force within them. So respect all living things means extending to everyone at least a neutral respect. You don't have to go out of your way to please people necessarily, and you don't have to go out of your way to commiserate. You can leave people alone. But at least respect people as much as you can, and particularly go out of your way to be kind and respectful to people when they're treating you badly, or they're treating you in an antisocial way. That means putting away your normal reaction and coming from the love of the infinite self. I can't say I'm perfect at this myself, but I'm trying, and I've worked on it a lot. And I don't think anybody could ever become perfect at it constantly, unless they were a saint. But it is a marvelous thing when you can become magnanimous towards others, even if they aren't magnanimous towards you. That's your test. The other part of respecting all living things is respecting nature and animals. When I first got on the path, I decided I'd like to be a vegetarian because I didn't feel good about eating meat. It wasn't just a spiritual perspective. It was because meat is often pumped so full of toxins and hormones and antibiotics. I thought respecting all living things would include respecting myself, so I became a vegetarian, and I did that for 7 years. However, vegetarianism is a very difficult discipline to sustain indefinitely, because there are certain nutrients in meat that are very hard to obtain in a completely vegetarian diet. And I found, flying from city to city, going from hotel to hotel, I couldn't sustain my energy being 100% vegetarian. So after 7 years, I eventually decided to include a little bit of meat in my diet. And so I still have some meat each week, in very small amounts. But I'm definitely not vegetarian anymore now. But it helped me in the early days when I first started training. However, respecting all living things also extends to projecting a love for the animals, projecting a care for them and not killing them unnecessarily. I don't personally agree with hunting. I can understand if you're a tribesman and you have to hunt to feed your family, but most modern hunters don't really need to go out into the forest and start blowing little animals' heads off. But that's just my personal opinion. And if you're a hunter, well, God bless you, and I hope it goes well for you. In respecting all living things, it assists you to become a big person, extending that love that you have and extending it out to everybody. So when you're feeling a little bit grumpy and you're walking down the street, it takes almost a superhuman effort, doesn't it, to be nice to people. However, if you're coming out of that infinite being within, you need to be nice to people as a discipline. You need to respect as part of the discipline of this quest. That means being polite, respecting people, not discriminating against them, you know, not harboring hatred or animosity, no sexual discrimination, racial, disabilities, whatever. None of that is on. You have to become an equitable being. Most discrimination comes from fear. We fear those things that we're not used to. So we tend to think this group over here are more dangerous than that group over there. And so that scares us. All discrimination comes from a sense of importance, where people believe they're more important or better or more creative or more socially acceptable than other people. We live on a planet that is an incredible mixture. Yes, there's a lot of evil, and yes, there's an awful lot of grim people that are a long way from making the journey from ego to spirit. But we have an infinite amount of time to evolve. Our planet has at least another 4 to 5 billion years before it will be used up. You can be assured that if you're infinite, if you're eternal, if you have patience, you can know that things will get sorted out in the end, and that people will come to a sense of sacredness gradually. Another thing that comes from this journey is that as you discipline yourself and develop control, you become automatically humble. It's not something you can fake, is it? You're either a humble person or you aren't. But the wonderful thing is that once you stop talking about yourself, showing off, demanding observers, cackling on about your achievements, pushing to the front and so on, humility becomes automatic, and it's part of that respect. Remember this, the ego has a tremendous amount of violence in it, not just physical violence, but also an emotional, intellectual violence. The ego likes to hurt people, likes to make them less, to put them down. It likes to attack and it likes to make people uncomfortable because it's uncomfortable. So part of respecting all living things is to not project an emotional, intellectual violence, as well as, of course, not projecting a physical violence. So don't trash people, even though you know that what a person is telling you is absolutely ridiculous. You know they're around the bend, and you know that perhaps they won't be able to pull it off, whatever they're trying to explain to you. Don't trash them. Try to build them up. Say, that's a good idea. You might have to make some slight adjustments, but I wish you well. I hope it works. And let them be. Try to stay away from this grimness of the ego that has to depreciate other people to feel okay. Respecting all living things is not projecting any unnecessary violence against the animals, against the plants, and not projecting an intellectual or emotional violence against other people. That's the sacred way. As you enter into that serenity within you, in meditation, prayer, purification, discipline, you begin to appreciate how enormous the God force is, how big it is, how much love is involved, and the authority it has, just through its indescribable magnificence. Once you've had even the slightest glimpse of that energy within your feelings, you're going to be an extremely humble person. As I said before, I've seen up that near-death tube on many occasions now, and I've seen what the light looks like at the end of the tube. To God force. There are no human words to describe the magnificence of it. I'm completely lost to explain it. It is utterly the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. It's the greatest power that exists. A glimpse of that energy, and every uptight, stuck-up twerp on this earth plane would sit down and shut up because they would be embarrassed. So even if you haven't had a near-death experience, you'll still be able to feel the God force in your heart as you begin to control the ego, and that will automatically make you a more humble person. So respecting all living things is understanding this point in your evolution and understanding the magnificence of it and doing your best not to allow the personality to create mayhem for you. Respecting the air, the water, the earth, the spirits of nature, the beauty of this planet, and respecting also the unseen dimensions that permeate this physical plane as well. From respect, we generate consideration and love. So by being respectful, we learn about ourselves. The trick here is to be respectful in situations where your natural tendency is to not be respectful. Step 19 is the power rises from within. The initiate doesn't need to push. It's quite a hard concept to grasp in our modern world that's so competitive. But let me explain it to you like this. At the regular TikTok level of energy, the hypothetical 20,000 cycles a second, you have to force things. You have to push. You have to get people to pay attention. You have to make a lot of noise, yearn, shove, promote, and really try hard. Most of the power you have is internal. As you garner the power, you can pull to you all that you need, rather than pushing to sell things, to tell people about your product, service, or knowledge. You can just allow them to come to you. It's so much easier when you allow life to come to you. In pushing, you tend to move things away from you. You've had the experience, haven't you, where you've gone into a second-hand car showroom and trying to buy a car, and the sleazy salesman comes up to you and is really trying hard to stuff the car onto you and telling you how fantastic it is and telling you how you can't live without it. You've already made up your mind to buy it, but the very fact that he's leaning into you puts you off, and often you walk away. So be careful that you don't have that effect upon people, upon life. Don't push and shove so hard that they deny you just because you're pushing. Once you understand the energy within you is becoming more rarefied, once you understand the power is there, you can visualize and feel the things you need as part of your life, and then take concerted action, moving towards your goals. If you want to heal a situation with a person, You don't necessarily have to tramp across town to talk to them. You can just breathe them in and breathe them out in a meditation. So, pull up that person in your mind's eye, say their name, breathe them in, hold your breath for a moment, exhale your energy and project light towards them. Do it 11 times. And as you breathe them in and out, send them love and healing. Next time you see them, they'll be different, or they'll be gone. Years ago, a company I owned was being audited by the IRS. The agent was giving us hell. He'd been on the one tax form for almost 18 months. Three of us got together at 4 a.m. in the morning, and we visualized the agent real small, in the palm of our hand. And we projected love to him, and then we blew a short, sharp breath to send him away. Just a blow. 5 days later, he called to say he was leaving the IRS. And could we help him get a job in the local area as an accountant? The tax matter was resolved in a couple of weeks once the new agent took over. So by working on the situation internally, we fixed it rather than suffering it externally, intellectually, trying to accommodate his needs. Understand that when you have a problem, there is an internal solution. The healing is an internal transformation. So you don't have to shove and you don't have to push to make things happen. You can stay in the flow and move towards where the highest energy is. And of course your serenity and your balance becomes a self-perpetuating affirmation of the power within you. So you have to understand the power is there, and you have to understand that you can move it. You can project love, healing, reasonableness. You can change anything. You can stand tall in silence and just move the energy around like a lighthouse. So begin to think in terms of eliminating struggle from your life. Work inwardly. I wrote a book once that was quite successful called Life Was Never Meant to Be a Struggle. You might have seen it in the stores. It talks about going beyond struggle. Of course, all struggle is part of the manifestation of the personality. It's part of the anguish that the ego creates, yearning and demanding and fighting to sustain itself. Pull back and get yourself into a position where you can control. If, let's say, you have a problem with money, start working your way back from that. Most people think that the way to get out of money problems is to earn more money. But if you're imbalanced at, say, $1,000 a month, you'll be extremely imbalanced at $5,000 a month and totally out of control at $10,000 a month. So how you handle money is to get into control of the money that you do have. If you only have $500 a month to live on, you have to think of a way to live in circumstances that don't cost $800 a month. There's no point in you making $5,000 a month if you're spending $7,000, because you're still going to be in financial trouble. So if you're imbalanced with money, pull back inside, quieten the ego, and tell it, hey, we don't need all these things. We don't need a fancy apartment. We don't need a fancy car. We just need to first establish control. That way we don't have to push and shove to get what we want in life. We can be balanced, take our time, move towards abundant situations, and think about what you're doing. Developing discipline and moving powerfully, not wasting your energy. When you have a burning need, it destroys your power. So if you absolutely have to sell something to someone, they won't buy it. If you absolutely have to have the job, they won't hire you. If you absolutely have to have this person in your life because you love them and can't live without them, the very fact that you are all over them makes them throw up and flee. So as you understand this, you understand the powers within. You start to act inwardly. Each success gives you confidence for the next situation. You know that you can pull to you whatever you want. You only have to visualize it, concentrate on it, and know it to be granted. Come with me now to the next session, and I'll talk to you about a very powerful concept from the Tao called Wu Wei. Wu Wei is the idea of non-action. Come, I think you'll find it very interesting. Step 20 is action through non-action. It rides hand in hand with step 19, power comes from within. But there are certain aspects and sophistications of this that I ought to deal with that are important. The idea from the Tao, called Wu Wei, is the idea that there is a natural flow in nature and in life, and that by aligning to that flow and disengaging the mind, one allows things to rest inside a natural simplicity and to effortlessly unfold in the space of time. Let me read you a few lines from the Tao. Perfect activity leaves no track behind it. Perfect speech is like a jade worker whose tool leaves no mark. The perfect door has neither bolt nor bar, yet it cannot be opened. Taking the idea of non-action, you can see in Taoist paintings very few brush strokes, simple lines, diffused lights, pastel colors. You see Wu Wei in the art and the simplicity of the pottery, in the effortless grace and gentle tranquility that is the hallmark of Taoist creativity. Originally, Wu Wei was taken to mean sitting in a monastery and meditating for 30 years or whatever. It was said that by doing nothing, you could gain everything. However, in our modern times, this sitting forever doesn't really work. What we can see through this idea of action through non-action is that because the initiate is dedicated, that allows him or her power. Non-action is being outside the emotional molecule of your people, that collective emotion. It's outside the desires and frustrations that most people go through. It's the lightness of touch that comes from confidence, grace, and a settled heart. So, for example, as I was saying before, if you want to sell something and you push it upon people, buy this, buy that, that is action. By pulling back and subjugating your ego, your needs, for the customer's emotional wants, that is non-action. If you're a salesperson, or if you handle a sales force, you're going to want to tattoo this idea of subjugating the ego on your staff's forehead and on your own forehead. If you teach your salespeople to learn to get underneath their customers, they will improve their performance dramatically. They have to subjugate their ego long enough to sell whatever it is that they're selling. A salesperson that goes into a shop and starts talking about himself, is all over everybody, is rah-rahing and pushing, that naturally causes people to defend. What's this guy after, they ask. They become protective. If you can teach a salesperson to get psychologically under the customer, to keep quiet, to let the customer talk, ask questions. Who is the customer? She's a buyer, but first and foremost, she's a woman, a mother perhaps, a parachutist, a rock climber. Find out, what does she want? What does she need? What are her considerations? Be there for people. By getting underneath, you sell them. By pulling them into the deal rather than shoving the deal upon them. Why? Because you're supporting them. When someone gives you their money, they are letting go of a small part of their security. Paying out at a deeply subliminal level actually takes them closer to financial collapse and an ego death. If I pay out this money, will I have less? Will I be able to eat? If I don't eat, I'll die, and so on. People have to be secure to transfer their funds to you. Never forget that. How you make them secure is to not come at them from above, telling them how marvelous the product is, or how marvelous you are. Instead, work on their comfort zone. Tell them that everything is cozy, safe, and secure. Work on their positive energy. Tell them about the good fortune that is about to descend upon them in these exciting and positive times. Then, and only then, mention your product. So non-action is really the act of watching the ebb and flow of events and getting underneath life. It's really weird because in the previous session, I was talking to you about being bigger than life. Being bigger than life is an inner feeling. Now, intellectually, you're going to put yourself underneath life. You're going to humble yourself, in the ego's terminology, and subjugate yourself to the needs of others, like your clients, before yours. Just long enough to make sure that they're okay and that you take the order. Being detached, you can see inside people's humanity and you'll soon understand what they want. Here's another example of non-action. If your body's sick, rather than being in the emotion of it, running around in a frenzy, taking tablets, calling the doctor, if you step back and understand that you're eternal, that the real you cannot be sick, you're in Wu Wei. You're in the non-action of centering yourself first and thinking through and feeling through what is your best move. What do you really need to adjust to your former balance, to your former health? Most disease comes from stress, and a lot of disease is an external manifestation of an inner disquiet. So by pulling back and going within, you can start to come to the emotional reason for the disease. And then also, you've got to remember that some disease is good because it shows you what you're doing wrong and gives you a chance to pull back and adjust your actions. So, if you're not well, rather than panicking, go quiet and listen to what the inner you is saying. Listen to the healing it's offering you. Now, think of this. You are always in the right place at the right time. And each thing that comes along can be perceived in that light. If you're balanced, you will move into a probability pattern that precludes pain and injury, because that is a manifestation of imbalance. To some, life seems like a type of roulette where people wander about and some get hurt and some don't, and some get killed and some don't, and some get sick and some don't. But that comes from an externalization of people's feeling. They feel that they're in a crapshoot. Once your feelings are healed, there's no more Russian roulette. Once you have accepted responsibility for your life, what you have to do is understand that if things are imbalanced, go within and examine the deep inner reasons why. Rushing around trying to fix the dam after it floods doesn't really work. It involves you burning a lot of energy. The source is where you should be. There you can fix everything. Gradually, your external reality will manifest itself according to your new inner patterns. So, Wu Wei is understanding that you don't have to push. When people rush forward, you step back. When they run, you walk. When they cry out and call for attention, you remain still. If you don't desperately want things, no one can move you. You have all the time in the world. Say that to yourself several times a day like a mantra. I am balanced. I have all the time in the world. I have all the time in the world. It's hard to comprehend at first that the external world that you're looking at is actually a manifestation of your inner dream. But once you comprehend that, it saves you an awful lot of struggle and rushing about. Another example I could offer you is when you're dealing with a friend and they're very difficult. You want them to change their mind and, say, support a project that you have. Action would be trying to convince them, standing over them and beating them around with intellectual argument, talking about the good qualities of this project, perhaps manipulating them emotionally by saying, if you were a good person, you would help me and you would be involved and so on, dragging them in saying, you owe it to me or whatever. The non-action is literally standing inside their mind and finding out, what is this person actually saying to me? What is their position? What is their attitude? If they want support, ask yourself, why won't they support? What do they need? Who are they? You know, where are they at this point in life? What is their agenda? So non-action is putting yourself aside, and even putting aside your need to have them support your project, say, and momently stepping inside them to discover who they are. Next, you see quite clearly that they're afraid, or they're too little to give of themselves. And so you don't waste your energy trying to persuade them. If you need help, it'll show up. If it doesn't, you can either manage on your own, or now is not the time to engage yourself in the particular project. Bag it. You see, everybody wants something. I know that sounds awful, because we like to think of a world where people don't want things. But in fact, everybody wants something. It's not a bad thing or a good thing. It's just the way things are. The ones to watch are the ones who say, I don't want anything. Because when they say that, it usually means that they do want something, but their agenda is subtle and hidden. If they really didn't want anything, they wouldn't need to say so, would they? Usually what people want is recognition, respect. They want to be built up, more energy. They want to feel more secure. They want you to endorse them. They're basically out there avoiding death. And that's what the ego is doing most of the time. Not necessarily physical death, but death of a rhythm, death of an idea, death of something that you're used to. So give people what they want. If they want you to endorse them, do so. If they need to feel secure, support them. Supply their ego's needs, and they will come to you effortlessly. And when they show up, figure out something to sell them and bill them. So non-action is a different way of looking at things. It's saying, first I'll go within. Rather than building a stockade to protect myself, I'll go within and feel secure. If you resonate solidity, you won't need the stockade. When people say we're building a stockade, the Mongols are coming, why don't you help us? You can say, I don't need a stockade, because the day that the Mongols come, I won't be here. But I'd be happy to help you with your stockade if you like. But please don't take it personally if I leave a few days before it's finished, if that's okay with you. Why is this attitude possible? Because the advancing energy of the Mongol army, as it starts to come down upon your village, you'll feel it months away. You'll say to yourself, my subtle feelings feel odd today. I can feel 60,000 Mongols in the near vicinity. It's time to visit my friend George in Bujumbura. And off you go. So, pushing and not pushing, action and non-action, psychology and reverse psychology, and of course silence, the sacredness of your life. That's how you create non-action. Let's go to step 21, which is dedicating your life to the sacred way. Once you accept the infinity within you, life becomes sacred. In the world of the ego, nothing in particular is sacred. So respecting your life, respecting all living things, and beginning to act in a sacred way, your actions become an affirmation of your intention, an affirmation of your dedication to your infinite self. So it's important for you to develop a sacred way, and that may involve religious ritual or sacred rituals or rituals that are meaningful to you. Okay, how do you make a thing sacred? You make a thing sacred by basically saying, this is sacred. So if you take some ancient religious relic, like you've got St. Matilda's toenails in a box or something, if everyone in the congregation considers St. Matilda's toenails to be sacred, they become sacred. Because people agree that these toenails in this little box that came from the 12th century are sacred. That's the only way you can make things sacred, is to concentrate upon them and invest them in a special kind of energy, a special kind of awe. So to make your life sacred, you only have to look in the bathroom mirror and say, this is sacred. Kind of a laugh. This is sacred. Then start acting in a sacred way. Act deliberately. Act with intention. You're guarding your energy. You're not trashing it. Be zen. Be ordered. You can have rituals and ceremonies that you do each day as part of your discipline. The discipline of rising early is a sacred discipline. The discipline of prayer, the discipline of silence, the discipline of looking after yourself. Concentration, remember, is love. When you concentrate upon something, you're loving it. If you want to create a sacred path for yourself, start to act in a sacred way. A lot of my philosophy has been influenced by the Native American tradition. I particularly like the fact that the Native Americans are close to Taoists, and like the Taoists, they revere nature. So when I go to my spiritual home in Taos, New Mexico, I gather with my friends, and they're all from different races and walks of life. They're not necessarily Native Americans, some are, most aren't. But we gather, and we perform ceremonies together. We perform talking stick, which is a Native American ceremony that takes place round a fire. Or we perform sweat lodges for healing, prayer, and meditation. Or we get together at 3 o'clock in the morning and we have a special meditation or a special process that we perform at night in the mountains. We're not a religious order or an ashram. We're just ordinary people. One guy works in a publishing company. One lady's a mother. One guy's a lecturer, which is me. One guy works at the local garage or whatever. But we're just ordinary people. But we gather together and act out our respect for each other, our planet, our evolution, and we act it out in a sacred way. I like to create that sense of sacredness with me wherever I go. Little things. I don't overdo it. For example, if I'm in a hotel, I pull out a flag from my bag which has a sacred symbol on it, and I pin it up in the hotel room. I might put out a little candle and place the candle beside the flag. Before I go out to my morning's business, I stop and I kneel before the flag and say some sacred things, just a word or two. Maybe I have an intention that day to deliver a product or a lecture or go to a meeting, visit with the bank manager perhaps. So I review it in my mind and I see things going well. And what I'm saying is, I'm in the ego's world, doing ego things, like earning a living and meeting with the bank manager. But these mundane acts are sacred to me because I'm concentrating upon them. So seeing your life as sacred is really no more than developing that attitude and having some small place that's special that you can call your own. It can be a small room in a house, or even part of a small room is enough. But in that room or in that place, you put your holy objects, the Bible, the Tao, or something that's been written that you feel has value. You make it like an altar to the inner self, And then you act that sacredness out during the day by seeing the inner self as sacred and seeing your life as sacred, honoring it and respecting it. And of course, seeing the planet as sacred. And from that sacredness comes even more humility, which I've already talked about, and a natural sense of gratitude. You have to take time to be grateful. Gratitude is not only a beautiful and humble thing, but it is a part of that affirmation that says, I'm in control, I'm eternal, I'm not in a rush. This is a beautiful journey. With all its ups and downs, it is still beautiful, and I'm grateful. In aligning to the sacred way, you embrace the infinite self. Develop sacredness in everything you do. That means concentrate on the things you do. Washing the car can become sacred if you make washing the car into a prayer. If you just roll out with some soap and water, washing the car can be a drag. But if you make it sacred, here's the bucket, here's the brush, here are the soap suds, here are the rags, and they're all lined up in little rows, and you pause for a moment to notice the way you've laid everything out, and there's the car, and you concentrate, and you infuse this car washing session with a sense of sacredness. This is how I'm experiencing or expressing my humanity for the next 20 minutes. So washing the car becomes a sacred prayer where you acknowledge and accept yourself and the God force and the beauty of this human journey. So turn your life from mundane and meaningless into sacred and special, and accept the sacred way as a part of your life. Step 22 is understanding that inspiration and creativity come from within. As a part of the journey on Earth, you're going to handle your survival stuff. You have to cook the food, wash your body, pay the mortgage, so on. But beyond all of that, and beyond your involvement with your friends and family and your responsibilities and whatever, the one purpose for you in this lifetime is for you to express and create. The hardest thing in the world to do is to think things up, to think up of a new idea, to think up a poem, to think up a painting, to compose a song. But when you get deep inside of you, you touch into the total creativity that there's ever been. I think in neuro-linguistic programming, they call it modeling, where you think about or notice what successful people do, and then you do the same thing. That, in the external sense, would be modeling. I suppose it's a good idea, except there is a danger that you wind up as boring as everybody else. In my lectures, I sometimes ask people to think of an idea that's never been thought of before. There's a long silence. Try it. It's quite hard. But the infinite self is ram-jam full of stuff that no one's thought of before. Also, all the energy of the very greatest creators of the past and present is still there. It hasn't disappeared. The creative splendor of this earth plane is infinite. It doesn't waste away. So whereas Mozart is now dead and buried, the inspiration that was Mozart is still alive. So if you're into classical music, you can pull upon the memory of Mozart and use that inspiration to improve your music and make it more original. All of Mozart's compositions, his memory, is still in the collective unconscious, which is infinite and eternal. It's in the perpetual global memory of our people, and you can call upon it and tap it. Just ask. Once you understand that creativity is infinite, you can see that creativity is putting the ego to one side and allowing subtle ideas and feelings to flow from within, to hear the song in your feelings, to feel and see the painting before it's finished, to see this thing that you're carving finished and complete and pull it out from within you. You know when you see paintings in a modern gallery, they're very intellectual, aren't they? They're often quite busy and neurotic, and you look at them and they don't necessarily please you. Often they repulse you. Then you see a simple painting of a child sitting in the dirt on a railway track, and it's very beautiful because you can see the simplicity, the pathos. You can see the emotion, you can see the feeling. In the end, your mission in this life is to create and express yourself. Creativity is not necessarily painting, music, art, or books. It can be carpentry, bricklaying, nurturing children, education, healing, whatever. But you're here to create. The best way to create is to discipline yourself. You need order and silence, and you have to be in touch with your subtle feelings. Then the creativity comes up from within. Most of what people create is fairly boring, isn't it? So they think it through and they say, well, this guy painted the tree green and to the left, so I'll paint it greeny-brown and put it on the right. And people look at it and think, there's a greeny-brown tree on the right. Yawn, yawn. Real creativity is an inner thing. Go past your resistance. Go past the natural laziness of the mind and get settled and get ready. And it's amazing how prolific and original you can become. The mind will slow you down. It will have excuses. It will want you to be disorganized. But your feelings, your infinity, is ordered. And it's all there, completed and ready. All you've got to do is pull it out. It flows endlessly. It's original. So put your thinking aside and call upon your subtle feelings to show you an originality, a new idea, or even an old idea that you express in a new and refreshing way. If you want to create, get the tools around you that you need. Lay out your paintbrushes. Get them in order. Lay them in a sacred way. Bless them if you like. Give thanks for your paintbrushes. Give thanks for color. Give thanks for your sight that shows you the reds and the greens and the blues. Put your paintbrushes in a special place. If you say, I'm going to paint at 8 o'clock because my word is law, then go and sit and settle and center within and feel the painting complete and finished. Up from your feelings will come a painting that is unusual, strange, different, and complete. All you've got to do is rub the brush on the canvas a few times, and there it is. People will love to buy it, or it'll just give them pleasure because it's different. So creativity is awkward. It's uncomfortable. Roland May wrote a great book called The Courage to Create, in which he said that you have to go beyond your natural inhibition. Let's face it, the personality has normal inhibitions about creativity because the personality hates to be evaluated. So the personality wants to paint something complicated and have everybody adore it, praise it. The personality is keen on things like its expression. You know, this is my art. This is my statement. I'm not going to change for anybody. I'm going to do my slightly green tree over there on the right. This is me, and everybody has to stand up and salute. There are loads of writers, artists, painters, and creators that, in my view, are full of it. When you listen to that stuff about my art, my poetry, my film, it always makes you want to throw up because it's so ridiculous. All creativity comes from the God force. You can't own it. It belongs to everybody. So my art, my film, it's just pompous. The fact is, when you get inside yourself, you won't be inhibited anymore. You won't feel like my art, my statue. You'll just want to create. People are going to like it or they're not going to like it. But if you have to sell your creativity, then you might have to adjust. There's loads of artists out there suffering from an eating disorder called too much ego, too little God force. Sometimes you have to adjust if you want to eat. So creativity will depend very much on, do you have to sell your creativity, or can you just create for the pleasure of creating? If you have to sell it, adjust it to what the market wants. I have certainly found that I've had to do that over the years, because if I really wrote the books that I wanted to write, that were deep inside of me, people wouldn't understand them. So I've had to adjust my books by putting them into a language that people can comprehend. And that's just a matter of merchandising. One day, when I've got some time, I write some books that tell the story of these inner perceptions, these inner worlds. And if people don't understand them, it won't matter, because they'll have all the other books to read in the meantime. That's just one of the compromises I've decided to make. Anyway, creativity is one of the main reasons for being on the earth plane. Think in terms of what will I create, and start making yourself create things. Take time out to create something. It doesn't matter if nobody will ever see it. Just practice expressing yourself. Because when you create, sooner or later, it's going to be very likely that you're going to have something brand new and fresh and different to sell. You've painted something, you've carved something, you've written a program on a computer, you've created some music. There it is. Creativity is money in the bank. You can become prolifically creative once you get the mind out of the way. So get organized, be creative. Silence the mind and realize that as you create, you're inside an eternal prayer. Feel out what it is you want to do, see it complete, and then express it in the external world where people can admire it or buy it. Be courageous. Try it out. It doesn't matter if you have to do 10, 15, 20 paintings that are absolutely ghastly and you trash the lot. Just as long as you create, and eventually you'll create one that's beautiful that you can keep or sell. So creativity is a discipline, and it's a marvelous way of expressing yourself and the God force within you. Seek it out, try things out, don't be scared, you know, practice, train, go on courses if needs be, and move yourself towards some kind of creative expression. You'll be amazed what you can do. Step 23 is always maintain freshness. Watch nature and align to nature. As you exist in the circumstances that you find yourself in the energy pattern that you are today, you have to constantly pump energy to sustain the situation. When you feel bored and fed up and stuck, what it means is you've used up the energy of the place where you find yourself. You know when you go into a new neighborhood and it's really exciting and really beautiful and there's a really cool cafe on the corner and the people are neat and there's a Jamaican band playing in the bar on Saturday night and you're really excited. But then after a while, it starts to lose its energy. You go into the bar where the band was and there's a cockroach walking across the wall and the little cafe isn't so cool and the people aren't really neat anymore. This is because you can use energy up. If you're just tick-tocking along at that sort of slug-in-a-puddle energy, you can stay in a place forever and ever. It doesn't really make any difference. But if your energy's alive, you're going to use up people. You're going to use up places. You're going to use up philosophies, diets, disciplines. You're going to change cars, change clothes. Keep staying fresh. And when you see the energy around you dying and stagnating, move. Change or enliven it in some way. Paint it a different color. Move to a new neighborhood. Act differently. Watch nature, because nature's your teacher. It moves and flows and moves again. There's an incredible beauty out there, and it's there to teach you. It's silence, it's beauty, it's humility. Stay aligned to that. Stay aligned to the ebb and flow. Stay aligned to the seasons and understand that winter is not the time for starting a new project. Winter is the time to turn inwards, to think, create, and get ready. Now the spring is coming. Now you can pull energy from the flowers, the rushing streams, the buds that come out. Now is the time to start a new project, the springtime. Move and put your energy into the spring. And now comes the summer, which is the time for the harvest. It's the time to collect the bills that are unpaid, to sign the contracts, to complete the stuff you began in the spring. And then on to the fall. When it comes to the time of the autumn or the fall, take time to think in terms of, hey, what kind of crud did I collect this year? What needs to fall away? And so as you watch the leaves fall, feel that same process going on inside your heart. Yeah, I can release these things. I don't need to hold on to that. This stuff is finished with. This stuff is stagnant. These relationships are over. The things you're finished with, pass them on to someone else. Some of the things may be valuable and you may want to sell them. If not, just give them away. Everything's on rental from the God Force and you can give it to somebody else. Say, here, I've finished with this coat. You have it. So by watching nature and aligning to nature, you can align to that infinity within you. Nature doesn't have a concept of death. That is why the world of the animals is so pristine and beautiful. An animal can experience momentary fear as it gets itself into a situation in which it is vulnerable, but the cow in the field isn't sitting there thinking about its insurance policy, thinking about dying. The cow is just being. It is. It's alive. It's munching grass. It's walking around. It's standing under a shady tree. That's the eternity of the cow. And that is the eternity of the raven. The eternity of the little crawly things on the earth. They are free of ego, so they don't have a concept of dying. Therefore, they're free of agony. From nature, we learn serenity. We learn security. We learn stability. As you stay aligned to nature as much as possible, you learn from it. You may want to try the discipline that I tried, which was rising at 4 a.m. every morning and walking in silence in the forest. If you don't have time to do that for 3 years and you don't fancy it, do it for a week. But by noticing and staying with the natural rhythms of this plane, the sunrise and the sunset, if you're up before dawn, you're ready. You're in a quiet energy. The rest of the world isn't up. Their ego and their mind haven't polluted the psychic atmosphere around you. You're ready for the day. I'm eternal, immortal. Here comes the sun. I'm ready. And as you watch and learn, you constantly police your energy. You see what is fresh. You see what needs changing, what needs to be reinvigorated. You can see if a friendship starts to fall apart. And you'll know that it's probably because you haven't put any energy into it. So call that person, invite them out, meet them for coffee. Put energy into the places where it's getting sluggish. Anything you finish with, release it and let it go. There's a little rule that a friend of mine who's a teacher lives by. And her rule is that anything that you haven't used or handled in the last 6 months that you're not going to use immediately in the next few weeks, get rid of it. Give it away. What the rule says is you will only surround yourself with things that are alive with energy, that you touch and animate and maintain, things that you're using. Everything else, you're going to liberate yourself of the weight of it. It's quite a nice little rule. This way you remain simple. You stay with nature. Look at the birds. They don't carry anything around. They don't have garages full of stuff. They're simple, and they know. They wake up in the morning, and they're not thinking, how am I going to make it today? They just fly around and peck. A peck here and a peck there. Everything's provided for them. Understand there's an enormous abundance everywhere. Keep your life uncluttered and simple, and that abundance flows to you. It's an uncomplicated process. constantly move away from clutter towards simplicity. And it's there that you will experience the infinite self. Come with me to the next session, and I'll show you some concepts that will liberate you from 90% of the anguish in this world. Thank you.